I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. I recently sat down with Tina Mashi, artist, musician, clinician, researcher, common person's philosopher. It was a great conversation. We talked about the power of love, how the aging prison population, especially those in the LGBTQ plus community, mustn't be overlooked, but celebrated for the wisdom and guidance they bring to their environment, both inside and outside the system. Tina's ongoing work with the Rainbow Justice Project documents the stories of both released and incarcerated elderly inmates to stimulate societal and institutional change. They do this by addressing issues of social justice and human dignity. Tina has written, produced, and performed music as an expression of her heart understanding in celebration of those involved and impacted. Please welcome Tina Mashi. Hello, Tina. It's good to see you today. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah. Hi, Susan. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here too.
Yes. And, you know, we obviously know each other from my Fordham days, and that's super exciting. I absolutely took away so much value and so much food for thought after being in your research class. But even during, I shared this with you, I knew that there was so much more that you were into as a researcher, as an artist, as a clinician, as a human, that I wanted to know more about the work that you do. So today I really wanted to tap into the specific work that you do around the criminal justice system and those who are aging in that system, specifically the LGBTQ community that is often forgotten, quite honestly, or perhaps from my lens anyway, I worry and sense that we are not accommodating people who are still unfortunately considered different than just regular human beings, like just the general population of humans, if you will. So I really wanted to talk to you about the work that you are doing in this area because, well, I think it's super important and it needs to be talked about more.
Sure.
And I feel like, and just to add to that, because I feel like we all think we live in our own emotional prisons in everyday life. I feel like we all are always working on that aspect of ourselves, or, you know, we seek counseling, we seek coaching, we seek people to help us uncover or help us reconnect with ourselves. What really happens to an entire population who's literally in a prison, not just in an emotional prison, but a physical prison? How do those connections then get made? I think that was sort of a little bit of that inquiry also, if I could just add that.
Yeah, it's very interesting because the work that I have done, and I've looked at youth all the way through to older adulthood of individuals and families, groups involved in a criminal justice system. I did work within prisons for 15 years and other kinds of criminal justice settings. And most of the people that were involved in the system had some history of trauma that, whether it be in the home, in their communities, in the educational system, traumatized in healthcare, all the way through social services, which put them at increased risk for criminal justice involvement. And in particular, the LGBT community was another marginalized population, as well as aging. And they were often overlooked in even the literature when it came to not just the general public and the news and any awareness of what's going on with these groups and the criminalization of them, but also within the scholarly literature. So when I went and I was really expanding upon the work that I did with youth and being traumatized, I wondered what happens to them next. I had worked with youth in a criminal justice system that were LGBTQ, and also identify myself as a person within the community and great concern for our overall freedom.
Yeah. And that's just it, right? Like even in everyday life, I feel like people age into this aged outness. Like we started to be more dismissive. Like it's not popular. It's not fashionable. It's not interesting. And people who are different, right? This continuous, ridiculous way of saying people are different. Therefore we don't include and we don't count them. And that seems ridiculous and arbitrary because there's really no value or meaning behind any of that. But these are people who are just looking for their own incredible experience and life as well.
Yeah. And I think that if we look at the literal situation as we're seeing it on the real world unfolding and what's happening within the prison system, if we take it higher and look at the metaphorical meaning of it all, it's as if the prisons are the shadow aspect of society. Mm-hmm. Everyone that's stockpiling in the prisons are have either things or representative of things we fear or xenophobia. And we've been in this fear-based separation consciousness of conflict and violence, trauma, disrespect of one another, that we've really come to the end that where not only are people in prison, but we've got a Earth in prison. Earth is a prison with COVID-19. We are all in lockdown. So it behooves us to be resilient like the people, many of the people in prison, particularly the aging and LGBT people, and learn from the wisdom of those that have experienced directly how to just survive a system despite a system that doesn't want you to survive.
Right. Built to reduce you and built to harm you in every aspect.
Yeah. And so they use the metaphor. We can, and there are atrocities that do happen within prisons. Mm-hmm. And it, even most of the trauma survivors, and I can even speak from my experience of my life. So I've lived experience and I have over 30 years of research of working with groups from marginalized populations. And so it's really those people that come to the fact of loving themselves despite a world that doesn't even see they exist, knowing that they exist. And the theme that came out in my qualitative study of the LGBT elders coming out, or come from diverse intersectional identities, being people of color, having mental health issues, HIV could be included, histories of traumas, disabilities, immigration histories, is that the internal presence of the self-love and acceptance, loving yourself and even your LGBTQI plus identity, or even getting to the point where they get to a state of unity in their interaction with, they're not bothered by people who are heterosexual. They're not even bothered by the attitudes that they have for them because they know it's not represented. It like bounces off like a reflection.
Right.
No longer they cannot, that xenophobia cannot affect them. And most of us, we get to the point of unconditional love and self-acceptance because we realize that treating someone with the same treatment that we've been treated only recreates a cycle.
Exactly.
So we offer something different, unconditional love and acceptance, even for the diversity of difference, even though they may not feel that way. Maybe we have a way in which we can begin to shift the narrative because we're not playing that same old dance.
I've always just sort of, it's like, it's always been like this strange thought in my head or confusion even. I'm like, at what point is it any of your business who I interact with or who I enjoy? Like, I always just felt that very private, intimate experience or lifestyle or whatever, you know, people like to refer to as, you know, their selection of who they're drawn to, who they're intimately attracted to. I just don't understand why that's anyone's business to judge me. I mean, love is love. I'm a huge, you know, fan of that. I know that self-love is the original state of the best love we can not only experience, but give, right? When you create your own foundation of being inside yourself and loving yourself first. And it's just always been so painful to see the negative and the abusive and the horrific response to humanity, quite honestly. because that's how I see it. Everyone's layered. Everyone's complex. No one is right. No one is wrong. Like it's all this like very, it should be this like freedom. It's sort of like when you look at the ocean, we have like thousands and thousands of different species of fish or coral, or there's so many living things going on and they all have systems at work and they're harmonious and, you know, shallow water and deep water and fresh water and salt water. Like, you know, if you look at that, that to me is like how I guess I sort of like reflect back in the mirror of humanity. It's like, well, let's just, you know, everybody has the systems at work. Everybody has the things that are good. Everybody has the things that create flow.
Right.
That keep the love intact, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
So we send back the love.
Yeah.
We send back love as a reflection.
Yeah.
And people may not find it at this point in time, but if it's often hard and difficult for people to look at things that they don't want to either see about themselves,
right,
a shadow side, or even if it's a positive side. Opposites sometimes reject each other.
They conflict. Yeah. No, I can understand that.
And so that's why people might react in that way to someone that is expressing love, because they may not feel worthy themselves. That's the biggest issue.
Of course.
The self-worthiness. And even the LGBT elders found the worthiness. And even the wise elders in prison, regardless of their sexual orientation, they gave back. They
right.
actually helped. Many reported, younger people report that the older people helped more than the social workers did.
And I won't doubt that for a minute. And from so many levels, as I'm sure you and I can immediately, you know, come up with, you know, the shared experience alone is unlike anything else, especially. Right. And when you've worked and you continue working with the elders in the prison system, it must be really fascinating, because becoming more internally connected with yourself and getting to that very, that kinder, more compassionate place, it almost goes against the grain of what tools are utilized to survive in prison systems. Not just against, you know, in terms of intermingling with others in the system, but the hierarchy of the administrative side of the system, which is also, you know, unfair and corrupt and, you know, something to be fearful of, because a lot of what could be coming down at you as a prisoner could be coming straight from those who are there and meant to protect you, but are not doing that. So it must be almost a strange dichotomy of softening oneself without becoming soft or I guess a target or vulnerable to the point where they're now exposed and aren't. And those are my thoughts that come to my mind when I think of how a program or a project might work, where we're taking people through a series of sessions or programs where they can find that more compassionate version of themselves. So tell me a little bit about, is that right? Is that wrong? I mean, that's like my first thought is, oh, how do you soften when you really don't want to be soft in a situation where you have to protect yourself?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind to me is the idea of power. There's so many misunderstandings about this idea of power and empowerment. But there's false power, where there's power over, where you have to dominate. And that's where the put downs come from, you know, that someone's got to be over someone and somebody's got to be below them. And they use language that represents that. It could be shaming language, or there's power with, where you're in your true power, where everyone is equal, that you can shine. You can be as brilliant as you are. And I could be as brilliant as I are. And it doesn't take a thing away from all that brilliance. It just makes it all the more brilliant.
Really, it's not unlike the outside world then, in terms of you can choose which side of the coin you want to ride on. It can either be hardcore with a lot of negative, or it can be absolutely self-empowering with all of the positive. And
right.
Either is acceptable, because one does not declare strength necessarily.
Right. And strength being used and getting into the positive masculinity, of which many men do have. And I do want to give a shout out. We've got masculinity and femininity, and this idea of the integration of the two, which is to me about the soft side and the practical side,
which is a gender neutral experience,
yeah.
Clearly.
Right. But say someone in their power, like particularly an older man in prison, he was a really good writer. He was also trained in the military and had really good resilience skills. He taught them. He knew how to survive prison. He taught them to the other inmates, and he helped them. He knew how to write. The other younger inmates did not, and he helped them write. So he made it like that. He could have did power over, a military guy, but he said, I'm going to work with them. I'm going to elevate them. And so he was profound, and a profound example of putting power, positive power.
Bringing your gifts, really, right? And letting and using them, right? You don't lose them, you're using them, and it's also benefiting everyone around you. So,
right. And so that is power. That is power in all its modern day unity power.
Right. I love that. It.
Yeah. And just think about that ripple effect of those family members that got those letters that he helped write for them.
Right.
Wow, that's so powerful.
It changes everyone's life. It's a domino effect at that point, right? It reaches wide and far. And yeah, there's so much like kindness and value in that.
And so you can talk about prisons, but you know, prison, we're talking about a consciousness or way of being where there are no walls.
Right.
Because those letters that went out, there's nothing stops them. Nothing's going to stop the love from coming outside the prison. And I do feel in some ways that I was brought in and the opportunity to do this, to help get this message out for the people in prison. The older people in prison, the LGBT community can teach us more about how to love despite in a furious power way.
I think that's amazing. How did you get involved in that? I mean, what led you there to that particular corner of humanity?
I think when I was growing up in my home and being, it was a very controlling environment to who I could be friends with. There's a lot of physical abuse and verbal abuse. And it was like being part of in a prison. I think it kind of resonated with me, and I wanted to, not in a conscious way, but being drawn to why this type of thing, why do people who love each other hurt each other?
Right.
I just didn't get it. And I was pursuing that answer. And I do feel I've gotten to the point where I've come to some ways that I'm comfortable with in that understanding the very broader metaphysical, spiritual principles that lead why people do these things and how we can heal from it.
Right.
Because we can't change the circumstances. The only thing we can do is transmute or transform how we think and feel about them. And this is not just an ego journey. It's not just a mind journey.
No, of course not. Right.
This is a journey of the heart.
And it also makes me think, so while you're describing that, it's interesting. I had a prison-like environment I grew up in as well. It was a lot of dictating of things, a lot of violence and such. And so for me, I always felt very drawn to people who were surviving because I was surviving. And so it was almost like unconscious at times, often, obviously, when I was younger, until I could really grow into the language and start to articulate and make sense of it all. But I was always very drawn to people who were surviving. I think I was looking for tactics and tools, quite honestly, as a young person. I think I was trying to figure out like how else do I protect myself? Like what else is there available? You know, what does that person do? And would that be helpful to me? I think those are the early stages of self-identifying, right? When you're in a condition and in a circumstance like that. And then of course it for me as well turned into more of a compassionate drive and a desire to see and hear and feel people who are having an experience like that.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I also want to use my gifts for the greater good. And we're all blessed with gifts. I think we're all artistic, we're all creative. Some people more ready to embrace that aspect. And I did, and I was a professional musician and am, and have done lots of recordings and even put my research findings to music as well.
Yeah.
And so We Are All Aging Prisoners is one song people can go on my YouTube channel and listen to, but it's also the story of us all To forgive is to set a prisoner free and realize the prisoner was you.
Right.
That's
I love that.
Something to ponder. Because in the end, when you want to transmute a trauma, you transmute it into the gifts that it is there to give you.
Right.
Because from that pain comes the diamond, or when you're, you know, rubbing, when diamonds are created.
Absolutely. All of that understanding and recognition and healing comes from the suffering. I mean, like, there is a certain amount of suffering that is beneficial for our growth and our understanding. I fully believe that. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, for those who out there who want to ponder it, it's when you take the role of the creator of your experience, as opposed to being a victim of outside circumstances.
That's right.
You begin to run your own life.
That's right.
You make your choices. And if there's a situation that is brought to you, that's the social mirror telling you there's something for you to, or me, to work on. That's it.
That's it.
And
I love
that. I am no longer triggered. When you're triggered, you're giving away your power. So those people who are triggered by LGBT community, go find love. Once you're in love, you're not even going to think about the gay people in love.
Right. Well, as I always say, don't worry. No one's asking you out. They could probably feel your disdain from miles away.
Well, that's their problem.
It's we've got
to send them, a gift card to some dating service. It's like, you know.
Absolutely.
And that they have permission to pursue this bliss, that this kind of liberating dance of the gay community, for those that do let it out, their authenticity, because there's certainly issues within the community.
Any community, though, right? Like, we could sit here and we can talk about, you know, the heterosexual community. And that, too, is layered like an onion. Not everyone who supposedly, or I guess, labels themselves as belonging in that particular community that's not a straight up one or two line definition. There's varying degrees of everything, because people are so different, and people's proclivities and likes and dislikes can be so different. And that doesn't just mean like in the sexual provocative sense. Sure, that can exist too, but it could just be in their regular rhythm and routine of life and the roles we play in our lives. It's everything. It's the expectations we have of ourselves or others. If it has anything to do with gender influence or sexuality influence, I mean, we start to go down all these, I don't really want to call them rabbit holes, but we can go down all these corridors, right? And pathways that are individualized, that are specialized. And really, no one is just one thing or black and white and simple. We're humans. We're layered. We are complex. We're special. We're unique. We're fascinating.
And we all could coexist.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
In this rainforest of light. And we can all equally shine.
Yes.
And be who we are. And it doesn't take away anything at all.
No, and it's amazing, because we all sort of win at that point when people are just doing good and doing it from a good, you know, healthy, compassionate place, wanting everyone to win, wanting to share and be, you know, in this greater community of abundance, if you will. Everyone wins. So it's always struck me as odd that that's an impossible thing to be able to understand or make sense of.
I kind of like the idea of thinking of the earth, despite that we're in this type of prison, but we're still moving around in some way. We're this living life artwork constantly in motion.
Right.
You know, isn't it? It's like a beautiful dance. We're all dancing together right now. So, you know, we're just a little sloppy, but we still love each other.
That's it.
Traditionally, unabashed. Easier said than done, but know that that's possible, and you're getting closer and closer to it. If you so choose. If not, if you choose the opposite end, then that whatever, it's what you choose, and that's your choice.
Right.
The most important thing is it's your choice.
Well, I always say, it's like, if you don't want to engage, that's fine. Go into your own room, but stop making messiness and stop interfering in other people's, you know, process or their dance, their beautiful dance. Leave them alone. You know, you don't have to do harm if you don't want to participate. You could just not participate. That's fine. Right. It's the harm part that becomes really tricky and really like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
If it's true. And if we do ponder, because it is a criminal justice issue.
Yeah.
If we fight fire with fire or return harm with harm, what have we done?
That's right.
And if we support it in society, what have we done?
Right.
Well, we're in lockdown right now altogether. What have we done? How did we get to the brink of a global pandemic?
It's been crazy. But it's been a lesson at the same time. Now, sadly, there are other parts of being in lockdown and being in a pandemic that impacts people, of course, people who were already maybe in a struggling situation. So it didn't make things easier. It certainly made them more challenging. But at the end of the day, I feel like the message was to stop, slow down, and start showing more compassion and appreciation. The fact that people came together and rallied in a variety of ways, whether they sung out at 5 o'clock in the afternoon or they maybe contributed more money to food banks or showed up to help or checked on their neighbor in a way or more often than they ever had for all the time they've spent living next to one another. But I found people to show more compassion. I just feel like it would be nice for us to carry those steps and measures and actions forward. And it just shouldn't be over trauma. It shouldn't be over a national shutdown. It shouldn't be a 9/11 or a snowstorm, as I like to call it, because that's what it is. It's like when there's a snowstorm, everyone suddenly wants to make hot cocoa together. But every day in life, people have this natural ness to go back to their own, their individual goal or achievement or their silo thinking. And I'd like people to not do that anymore.
Yeah, well, I agree. And that idea of where my favorite era is the 1960s, and liberation and also universal love.
Right.
That whole emphasis, that's it. This is when we're all together, one big family, unity. We're all rainbow.
Right.
All the colors of a rainbow.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
So I really love the Rainbow for Justice project. And is this something that carries on currently? Is it an ongoing project or was it a moment in time?
No, it's ongoing. And there is a program that I do called Unconditionally Me. Walking the path of resilience, liberation, and unity. And this is about everybody. This is an inclusive movement that includes all people, regardless of how they identify. They just want to move into a different space from separation to unity, from fear-based thinking to love, creative, focused thinking. Everyone's an artist. The Earth is an artist colony. We are.
That's
we
it.
Are all artists. There's not one person who's exempt from that.
And is this something that people can get involved in with you, or how does
absolutely.
That work?
We can go around, and anybody who wants to get involved can get involved. You can participate and learn from it. You could become a facilitator of this Unconditionally Me. It's life changing. It's transformative. I've used it in many different settings, and it seems to really resonate and shift people from moving from fear-based thinking to much more problem-focused to solution-focused. And we certainly want that within the LGBT community and the wider community in general. We all live together.
We do.
I love all of you.
Yes.
I just want to choose between. I have common interests with all of you. And we are more beyond this sexual gender identity that call ourselves. We're just so diverse. And if we start to put in diversity of thought and diversity of being as an important aspect of diversity, we will thrive and we will be free moving and we won't need to be constricted anymore to sort of reflect upon why prisons were created in our own prisons. We can begin to live the life we're all entitled to live for our freedom, pursuing our purpose and our joy. That's it. That's life.
Wasn't that the whole point all along?
Absolutely.
That's what the whole point was all along. I love that. I'm going to make sure that we include your YouTube channel and all of the details surrounding the programs that, well, these in particular that you work on and lead, because I feel like, listeners who are interested to become more involved, to grab a hold of just more, right? We all are looking for more. And I think that this is a really important place to latch onto and to find more. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. Think of it like if you participate in this, these gatherings, these unconditionally me gatherings, it's actually unconditionally me, I, we, that it's like a love sound bath.
Right.
It's hearing the language of love as opposed to what we're used to.
Right.
It's,
that sounds like a lovely immersive dynamic to me, or a situation to me, quite honestly. And before we sign off on, I'm going to include some really great music that comes from Tina directly. So I want everyone to stay tuned and continue to hear just the beauty and the message that Tina has put together for us. So thank you very much for being here today.
Oh, sure. If anybody wants to contact me, you can reach me at tmashi59@gmail.com. I'll spell that tmashi59@gmail.com.
Excellent. And I'll have that in the show notes so everybody knows that they can pick it off there as well. That's perfect.
Thank you, great.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Susan, for having me.
Yay.
We are all aging prisoners, living our lives behind bars. We are all aging prisoners, set the prisoner free. Along the way.
that's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.